News of Madoff's crimes continued to unfold. Stories came in from all over the country, and they started to draw me into these weird little worlds, like Palm Beach, Florida, one of the hardest hit places, where a lot of people lost a lot of money.
Hello.
Hi, this is Alicia. You said you'd be willing to talk to me?
It's that girl.
Country clubs here didn't allow Jews in until 1965.
So we made our own country club.
The Madoffs had a house here in Palm Beach, and they belonged to that Jewish country club.
People would join just to get close to Bernie, to get a chance to possibly invest with him.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend lost everything.
What do you think the rabbi did at services that week?
I don't know. I never go.
Me neither.
Actually, I have this friend. She plays accordion. Her mom lives down in West Palm Beach across the tracks. And she told me the congregation recited the Kaddish for Bernie Madoff.
Maybe they should.
That was a clip from the film A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff, which is playing at this year's Portland International Film Festival. Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today I'm delighted to once again be joined by Ben Popp. He's the head of artist services at the Northwest Film Center. Ben, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Konch. Always a pleasure to be on.
And we've got a full slate of local filmmakers with us. Dawn Jones-Redstone and Keisha Jarrett are bringing their new short film to PIFF, the Portland International Film Festival. Dawn is the director of the short film See Me, and Keisha managed the production. She's also the managing director at Artists Repertory Theater. We'll be hearing more about that. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And we're also joined by Alicia Jo Rabins and Alicia J. Rose. They've teamed up on the feature film, A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff. Hello, A. Jo and A. Rowe.
Hi, Conch. How's it going?
Hi.
So, Ben, normally the festival screenings take place at the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Theater, as well as some other popular venues around town. But this year, all the screenings that you're doing are virtual. They're going to be on people's home screens.
Yes, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, and theaters being shut, we're going the way that everyone else is going, and that is a virtual film fest. So people will be able to watch all of the films through the run of the film festival, which is March 5th through the 14th. And you can watch it via your laptop. You can watch it via Roku TV or an Apple TV. So in that sense, it's kind of nice because you can watch it whenever you want, however you want, in whatever you want to wear, as well as we are doing a drive-in though. So there will be a physical component actually to the festival as well. Most of those films, however, are all older repertory films, but we're showing a short film made by a Northwest filmmaker previews before every single one of the features. So there will be a kind of in-person aspect to the festival.
So there's some flexibility to the screenings aside from the drive-in ones where you have to drive in. And now normally there are all kinds of other events at the festival. There are opening night events, there are workshops, unconferences, discussions with visiting filmmakers. How are you creating community this year when we're all unable to sit next to each other?
Sure. Yeah, we have, there's going to be running throughout the festival happy hours for filmmakers to interact with one another. We're going to be doing workshops that people can attend to watch, a pitching workshop, for example. There's going to be a few other interactive events. One in particular is by a filmmaker, Lance Weiler, called Where There's Smoke. And it's everyone goes into breakout rooms via Zoom and is trying to discover what actually took place in Lance's past in regards to his house that was burned down, I guess, when he was a kid. So it's a really interesting program as well. So people get to kind of discuss with one another. So those are primarily the ways that we're able to create the community aspect as well.
Now, the festival is already underway, March 5th through the 14th, but there are several more days of events still ahead.
That's true. Yeah, it's still got, 4 more days of the festival. So there is another Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 more days of the drive-in. Again, since all of the films are happening throughout the run of the festival, you should be able to watch them. We have an event taking place on March 13th, which is a closer look at improv. It's going to be a improvisational theater kind of thing featuring some of the folks from Bridge City Improv, Kickstand Comedy, Curious Comedy Theater, Funhouse Lounge. That's in conjunction with the film For Mad Men Only, The Stories of Del Close. So there's going to be that happening, as well as a handful of other things. And you can always find out more at the website, which is cinemaunbound.org.
So cinemaunbound and nwfilm.org are where all the information is?
Yes.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about See Me. This is a short film that was made during the pandemic lockdown, a real collaboration led by Keisha Jarrett and Dawn Jones Redstone. Dawn, you brought in some members of the community to write and perform and basically build this project from the ground up.
Yeah, actually, so in August of last year, I was contacted by Keisha Jarrett, and she asked me to direct a short film that had just been conceived of earlier in the year in July by a group of Black writers who were looking to, you know, find a way to talk about what their lives were at this particular unusual moment in time between the pandemic and the racial justice reckoning happening in our city and nationwide. And it was really like they knew they wanted to make something, but they weren't quite sure what. And it was Keisha that said, let's make a short film. And she brought me on board and she said she was going to put me in a writer's room with 3 of the original Black writers, Josie C., Vince Chambry, Keisha herself, as well as an animator, that we were going to write the short in 1 week and then we were going to film it a month later. And I thought that this was crazy and I immediately signed on because in part it just sounded like an amazing and new way to work. But also it was just exactly what I wanted to be working on at this moment in time. And it felt really good to be like trusted to collaborate, to, you know, help lift up Black voices at this moment. So we brought on our line producer, Ashley Mellinger, and we brought on an all BIPOC crew and we filmed and finished up in February. And See Me was born that way. And it's I'm really pleased and proud of like what we all did in a very short amount of time and starting to get some good feedback around it too. So I'm happy that the messages are resonating.
Right. Well, when you were last on the show, we were talking about your film, Sista in the Brotherhood, about a woman trying to break into one of the traditionally male trades. And in that same vein, you've been all about bringing underrepresented people up through the ranks of your own industry.
That's true. I had a previous career in the construction realm and Sista in the Brotherhood, partly based on my own experiences, as well as the thesis of my producer, Dr. Roberta Hunt. And I've also been working, I'm not sure if you're referring to this, but I've also been working on trying to bring greater inclusion and diversity to the film industry as well, working on the incentives with Oregon Media Producers Association and a small core group of folks who actually right now, just this morning, I was on a call with a representative talking about House Bill 3010, which will bring some basic, really basic requirements to the film tax incentive program. Yeah.
So Keisha Jarrett, she's the managing director.
Yes, Keisha is the managing director at Artist Repertory Theater. And this is I think it was like their first time making a film, especially in this way. So there was a lot of like theater people that worked on this as well, like all of the cast. Most of them were coming more from the theater world.
Yeah, the live theater world. Well, that's interesting because, of course, the live theater world is facing so many challenges. Artist Repertory Theater has faced many challenges over the years, but nothing quite like the quarantine of this past year. So it sounds like she was interested in doing this breakout project and bringing in some of these folks who were having trouble getting out on stage. And you seem to be the person to connect with.
Yeah, we knew each other actually through a local women's producers group, the local Femme Fatales chapter, and we had met once. And I think we just like followed each other on social media. And because also I had worked with Josie Seed on Sister and the Brotherhood, she appears in the film and she was a writer on this project. She asked me to do this, and it was my good fortune to be asked. Yeah, it's really unique. There's a much bigger story here about how it was made in terms of how Artist Repertory Theater actually found a way to use the Payroll Protection Program to hire artists to make art. And they created this company called the Mercury Company. And underneath that, there was this subgroup called DNA Oxygen, which is specific to this Black group of writers. And they did different rounds of this larger Mercury Company. And the first one, there were several projects and several artists. And then the one in October was even bigger, lots of artists hired. I also got to work on another short film at the same time, like just the development of it. But all of that to just say that I feel like Artist Repertory Theater is really innovating, you know, how artists can work together and make art, how theater can work with film, and how theater can find new ways of telling stories.
Well, it's interesting about, well, let's hear a little bit more about See Me, because it's out now, it's at the festival, and not quite as tight a schedule as, say, the 48-hour film challenge, but still, you were using some of the improv techniques that are probably better known for some of the British realist filmmakers. You know, you're gathering together this group to collaborate on a story. So what can people expect to see on the screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a story with a lot of heart. It's a story of three Black Portlanders who are just trying to get by and go about their daily lives as the turmoil of the outside world begins to seep in. And I think that's something that's relatable to all of us, but of course there's this extra layer in particular for Black Portlanders. What I'm really proud of about the project is that it is still hopeful. It is still, there's joy in it. There is power in it. And I think there'll be a few surprises when folks watch it. I don't want to leave room for that in a short film, but I'm excited for folks to check it out.
Thank you, Dawn. Dawn Jones-Redstone and Keisha Jarrett's short film, See Me, will be screening at the Portland International Film Festival. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Conser. Let's play a clip now from the film, See Me.
Over the police killings of unarmed civilians, Oregon officials have made it clear dramatic action is necessary to slow the spread of the coronavirus pandemic, citing the Stay Home, Stay Healthy public safety campaign. However, some experts point to Black Americans who bear the brunt of both police violence as well as the deadliest infectious disease threat in a century. A conflagration that has laid bare long-standing injustice, resulting in a kind of pandemic within a pandemic. You're listening to Opie.
In other news, last night, police clashed with anti-racism protesters before declaring a riot again in downtown Portland. More than 20 arrests were made. Prior to the arrests, police...
That was a scene from the short film, See Me. You're listening to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Conser, and we're talking today about the Portland International Film Festival with filmmakers Alicia Jo Rabins, Alicia J. Rose, and Dawn Jones-Redstone. And now let's talk with Alicia Jo Rabins and Alicia J. Rose. Their feature film, A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff, is a highlight of this year's festival. Alicia Jo, this film is an expansion of a one-woman show that you wrote and performed.
So A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff began as a theater piece, which is based on a real experience I had in 2008 and 9. And I started thinking about making it while I was living through that experience. And then I got a grant to support actually creating the theater piece in 2010. And that was a two-year grant. So the 2010 to 2012 was the original creation. So it's about 10 years old from its kind of first stage of existing in the world. And it had a premiere at Joe's Pub in New York, and, you know, sort of a one-woman chamber rock opera. And then I moved from New York to Portland 8 years ago, and Boom Arts, which is a theater production company here, invited me to develop it further, which I was excited about because it didn't feel finished to me. And that's when I took away the live band because we couldn't fit it into the budget, but hired Zach Margolis, who's an incredible Portland animator, to create full-length animations to be projected behind me. So it's both kind of the set and the live band. And I edited the studio recording to make backing tracks. So everything got a little bit kind of virtual around me, but it was still me performing the same, essentially, solo show. And then 3 or 4 years ago, I was like, okay, I think I'm done touring this, and I just want to document it really well and make sure that it doesn't just disappear when I stop, but I'm done. So I hired a great theater documenter guy who specializes in that. And we were meeting and talking about cameras and angles. And then I thought, you know, it would be so great if there was a little more of a filmic approach, like just maybe we could start backstage, or, you know, I was just thinking about Netflix comedy specials and how they'll like give it a little bit of an arc. So it's not just like, you know, a curtain rises and then the piece starts. And he was basically like, I just document theater. Like, I don't do that stuff. And that's when I emailed Alicia, who I'd never met, but I had received an email that was meant for her, but came to me because our names are easy to confuse. And we both work in music, and some music person had both of our names and sent something to. So at first I got this email and I was like, it almost makes sense, but it doesn't. And because my husband is kind of a longtime Portlander, his band had played with Alicia's band many years ago. He's like, oh yeah, that's Alicia Rose. So fortunately I had like a decoder in my house to be like, help me understand what was happening. And so I forwarded, I tracked her down, forwarded on. And I just for years after that wanted to find an excuse to kind of hang out with her. But it seemed a little weird to just be like, we have similar names. Let's get a drink. So I was like, this is my chance. I'll just hire her for like 3 hours to watch my kind of archival footage, meet with me and the filmmaker, the documentarian, and just kind of help us brainstorm. And then she kind of walked into that meeting, which was our first ever meeting, and like exploded the whole idea. I'll let you take it from there, Aero.
Well, I mean, gosh, Dawn, you know, and Conch, sorry, we're just like talking to Dawn now, if that's okay. We're like, it's filmmakers talking to each other. But no, I'm please pipe in any things, but I will finish this little, this story. But, you know, Ajo, she had reached out to me and I had heard of her a little bit, not a lot, but enough, you know, that like she was doing some stuff that, you know, and I'd heard about a Kaddish for Bernie Madoff. And I thought, oh, that sounded really cool, but I missed it. And so when she got in touch to me out of the blue and was like, oh, I'm interested in having you consult on this. Tell me what to do. I've got a very modest budget to document it. And then I watched everything and I listened to everything and I Googled everything because, you know, that's what we do. And I loved the songs and I loved kind of her vibe. And, you know, she sent me the script and I read it all. And I just found myself getting frustrated before I got to the meeting thinking, why would you spend money documenting it when you've already documented it? Like, you've basically already done it twice. Why do you want to do it again? This is how I am. I was like, what? And so, but then I was like, I had so many ideas. I was like, oh my God, she sings these songs in the voice of the characters. Why isn't she the characters? Like, there's all these opportunities. I just had a million ideas. And you know, Dawn, when you get involved in a project, you either have a million ideas or you really don't. And for me, it's like a bounty or it's barren. And with this particular project, it was just like a bounty. And I didn't have any expectations. I walked in, you know, I was like stoked to make $150 to consult with her. I was like, great. Anyone who pays me, I will talk to. It's never. And I was like, can I be honest with you? And she looked at me and the poor videographer is sitting right there. The guy's like, him.
Oh, no.
He's like sitting right there, Dawn. And I'm like, I just don't understand why you'd spend money on doing that when you could do this. I know it's more ambitious, but have you ever thought about, you know, making this into a feature film where we could be with you on Wall Street. You could be the characters whose voice you sing in, you know, maybe we could have, I don't know if I thought of synchronized swimming in that moment, but you know, we could have these, we could have these, you know, sort of breaking the fourth wall to approach the sort of more theater aspect of it. Like, you know, we could try these different, I don't know. I just had a million ideas and I was like, you could make a movie. Why do that when you could spend 10 times plus the amount of money somehow and find that in the movie. And you know, we're both, we have Aquarius and Capricorn for those who follow the astrology. Anyway, and we like to blend patterns both. Well, now I do. You know, I think we both were kind of, we really thought this would be interesting. And, you know, from that moment, you know, what did the videographer was sitting right there and he looked at both of us and what did he say, Ajo?
He was like, I think she's right. It was so generous of him. I need to thank him. Maybe he's listening right now. He's based in Portland. I had already signed the contract and everything. He was just like, no, you should do this.
So he basically graciously backed out and we kind of whirling dervish together. And we were like, I was excited. And I was just coming off of making my web series, Gusbandry. I'd spent 3.5 years telling my own story. And I felt like I had done that, but I also felt like the only engine in my project. And that was, it's hard on you, Dawn, as you know, and yeah. You're the one pushing and pushing. And when I met Ajo, I was like, oh my God, it's like another one of me, but not me. And her name's Alicia, and I love her project, and we can both be engines, and maybe this is a way I can take a breath and take a leap at the same time, you know, into working into a larger medium.
I think there needs to be a short film made about the two of you getting together, honestly.
I know, The Curious Case of Kismet. Maybe someday, but it's such a great part of the story behind the story behind the story.
Should we say briefly what the film is about?
Well, I was going to back up a little bit.
Please back up.
So, well, for the benefit of our listeners, tell us a little bit about the central character in your piece, Bernie Madoff, who I should mention is still very much alive. And also, you know, maybe give us a little bit of information about the tradition of the Kaddish.
Yes. So I like to think of, even though he's in the title and he is at the center of all the kind of thoughts and conversations that happen in the piece in a way, I like to think of him as kind of like a cipher at the center of the piece. He's kind of the inciting incident in a way for like a lot of thoughts about what it means to live in capitalism, what we owe each other, what are the limits and obligations of community. And
he's the MacGuffin.
Yeah, exactly. And how can spiritual traditions like inform, ancient spiritual traditions inform our daily life? So Bernie Madoff, if you weren't around for this, he created the largest financial crime in history that we know of. He basically defrauded people from, depending on how you count it, up to $65 billion. And he had a hedge fund that was just a total Ponzi scheme. So he pretended that it was part of the stock market and people would get their reports every week. And, you know, it behaved like a normal hedge fund, but actually he was just like had a bank account at Chase or whatever. I don't know what bank, probably Deutsche Bank. And he was just taking money, you know, he'd put money in, take money out. It was never invested in the market. And this happened basically in plain sight for decades. No one knows quite how long, but they think up to 40 years. He was like the head of NASDAQ for a while. So he was very much a big player on Wall Street. And meanwhile, it was just emperor has no clothes. He was carrying out this complete fraud. And I had an artist residency. So I was living in New York and I got an artist residency on Wall Street from this incredible nonprofit called Lower Manhattan Cultural Council, which does a lot of programming with artists in Lower Manhattan. And one of their main programs is granting unused office space to artists to work in. And so some of them are short term, some are longer term. And mine was a full year along with about 20, 25 other artists in a building on Wall Street on a floor that just wasn't rented. So essentially a business had moved out. They didn't like fix it up. There was like wires hanging out of the ceiling. There were like clocks dangling from the wall. And we artists got to move in and each of us, you know, was assigned an office, an empty office. They kind of threw some old office furniture in there for us to use. And we got to make work in it for a full year. And that was the year of the financial collapse. So I you know, would ride my bike in from Brooklyn and I definitely was not interested in finance except for like how to survive financially in New York. But I wasn't interested in Wall Street or anything. And then suddenly this drama, this kind of global drama was unfolding in front of my eyes. I would look out the window and see people carrying banker's boxes of their like, you know, desk equipment down the street, having lost their jobs. So suddenly I felt like I planned to work on other stuff, but actually this huge drama is unfolding right in front of me. And I became a little bit obsessed with Bernie Madoff and the fact that, like me, he's Jewish and we both are Ashkenazi Jewish. So like our recent ancestors are from Eastern Europe. And so genetically, we're pretty definitely related. And he looked like my dad, who's a really great guy, which Madoff is not. But I just had this kind of deep sense of like, I feel unwillingly connected to this guy. Like, I don't want to be, I don't know him, I'm not really in this community. And yet there's some way in which, if you zoom out, we are from the same community. And what do you do when someone from your community does something terrible? And so the idea of a Kaddish is, the Kaddish is a prayer for the dead that we recite for our like beloved family members when they pass away. And you say it every day for 11 months. And you say it in community. And so it's a way of providing community for mourners and kind of honoring the soul of the person who has passed away. But there's a very rare and kind of ancient tradition of excommunication. So if somebody does something that's so terrible that they need to be kind of kicked out of the tribe, you would observe all the mourning customs. So you would say the Kaddish for them. You would sit Shiva, which is the traditional 7 days of kind of extreme mourning in the beginning. And even if you saw them on the street, you would pretend that they don't exist. So you really, they become dead to you. So the idea of reciting a Kaddish for Bernie Madoff is essentially my idea of like a modern progressive excommunication, being like, I want to draw this line and kind of in a, like a feminist ritual art-based event, ceremony really, which is the whole film in a way, say, you know, you are not like one of us. We can't, I can't include you in my people. And at the same time, I'll just finish this thought by saying, at the same time, looking at how the whole system of capitalism and of Wall Street and of deregulation and taking away safety nets for all kinds of people who live in America, how that also is related to this. So in a way, I wanted to draw a line and say, you're not part of my community. And in a way, I wanted to investigate how just as Americans, being forced to operate in capitalism, how we are all responsible for one another, and what is the line between this connectedness and kind of excommunication and compassion and judgment. And I draw on mystical Jewish ideas about that to kind of consider those questions.
Well, Alicia Joe, at the start of the film, you mentioned your work teaching the Torah to young people, and you're an accomplished musician. And I don't know how many people know this, but the Hebrew scriptures, most of them at least, are meant to be sung. They're meant to have a rhythm, to have a musical accompaniment.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, we like to divide up in modern thought. We like to say this is art and this is religion and this is music and this is theater and this is ritual. And I kind of don't really buy into all those divisions. So you're absolutely right. There's, you know, these little squiggles. If you look at a Hebrew Bible, there's squiggles that are actually this ancient form of musical notation that tell you how to chant the Torah. And when you, if you go to a synagogue on a Saturday morning, the Torah portion for that week will be chanted. And I've had this 20-year practice as a bar and bat and b'nai mitzvah tutor. So I'm teaching 12-year-olds one-on-one usually to chant from the Torah. And that's still true today. So, you know, I go from doing whatever art thing I'm doing, and then I'm like, oh, it's 4 o'clock. Got to like meet, you know, on Zoom with this kid and help them learn their Torah portion. And to me, it's all part of a general kind of, you know, artist, priestess, you know, whatever it is, to me, it's all part of the same energy.
Oh, I love it.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Kanzer. And we've been talking today about the Portland International Film Festival. Thanks to our guests today, Ben Popp, Alicia J. Rose, Alicia Joe Rabins, and Dawn Jones Redstone. It's been great to talk with you all today.
Thanks, Dawn.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
And a very special note of appreciation to Ken Jones for his expert work engineering today's program. Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. We'll go out now with another clip from the film, A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff. Meanwhile, you can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, @wordsandpicture.
They all lead to a dry hole, just money in the wind. This one's different. There's a lot of assets. We're gonna get some money back to the victims of what happened down on the 17th floor.